Welcome to today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, January the 10th, 2024. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik, and here is our first story. Reynolds eyes faster income tax cuts. In annual condition of the state address, Iowa Governor shares proposals for the 2024 legislative session. This is written by Benjamin Fisher of the Telegraph Herald. Governor Kim Reynolds on Tuesday shared her vision for the 2024 session of the Iowa legislature. Her plans include accelerating and expanding income tax cuts, raising minimum teacher pay, and reimagining special education, mental health, and substance abuse services. The proposals in Reynolds's seventh condition of the state address as governor will again test the cohesion between the Republican trifecta leadership in Des Moines at the helm of the House, Senate, and governor's office. Local Republicans expressed general support for the proposal's intent before delving into their details. Reynolds wants to reduce the 3.9% flat income tax rate established in 2023 tax cut even further to 3.5% starting in tax year 2025, and she wants to get there faster than planned in the phased-in 2023 law, beginning a flat 3.65% tax rate in this tax year, retroactive to January 1st. This bill represents a total savings of almost $3.8 billion for taxpayers over the next 5 years, she said, and it gets there by cutting taxes for every Iowan who pays them. Iowa House Minority Whip Representative Lindsey James, a Democrat from Dubuque, shared concerns about the impact Republicans' aggressive tax cut agenda will have on the state budget. The governor dismissed claims of the negative impact tax cuts have on lower-income Iowans as false. James, however, retained her skepticism Tuesday night. Everyday Iowans deserve tax relief, she said, but under the governor's tax policy, the majority of the resources go to the wealthy and corporations. Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, a Republican from Piasta, who was among lawmakers walking Reynolds into the Iowa House Tuesday night, said she still wants to see results of the recent income tax cuts before agreeing to the eventual cut to 0% supported by Reynolds and other Republicans. But she told the Telegraph Herald that accelerating the income tax cut might even help that. Because our state is in good financial situation, we can comfortably accelerate it, Lundgren said. If accelerating it helps us see those results more quickly, then that's great. James was concerned about impacts to the state budget. I feel concerned that vital services will be jeopardized, she said. The REC, Revenue Estimating Conference, has projected the next 3 years of declining revenue. Reynolds's budget proposal would spend $8.92 billion in the fiscal year beginning July 1, which accounts for 79.4% of projected revenues, which the governor's staff agreed were expected to be 1.1% lower than in the current fiscal year when counting tax cuts impacts. But Reynolds's budget would begin using some of the taxpayer relief fund, created using revenues collected over past years' state spending, plus large sums of unspent federal funding, largely from President Joe Biden's historic federal spending bills, this year and more each year until it's empty in fiscal year 2030. Reynolds's proposal also included numerous changes to education in Iowa. To address consistent concerns that recent state budgets slow increases in state funding aid to public school districts, Reynolds again pitched a plan to raise teachers' salaries, this time by raising their minimum pay. Whatever improvements we make to our education system, the success of our kids will always depend on great teachers, she said. We want younger Iowans to see the teaching profession as something to aspire to. It's one of the highest callings one can have, so let's make sure that teacher pay sends that message. Reynolds's proposal that the minimum starting salary for teachers be $50,000, a 50% increase over the current minimum, and that the minimum for teachers on the job for 12 years or more would be $62,000. Reynolds plans for the state to pay the difference required by raising those minimums. Reynolds's budget proposal would increase state funding for education overall by 5.5%. That would include a 2.5% increase for state per pupil aid to school districts, as well as more money for education savings accounts and an increase in transportation aid to districts. Iowa's area education agencies, which provide special education and other services at schools, would be essentially remade via Reynolds's plan. She proposed giving state funds for a school district's special education services to the districts rather than AEAs, then allow districts to decide what to do with those funds. Reynolds would shift general supervision authority and $20 million from AEAs to the Iowa Department of Education. AEAs would only be authorized to provide special education services and special and general education to students in the juvenile detention or foster care systems. Over the last year, in dozens of conversations with parents, teachers, school administrators, and AEA staff, it's become clear that while some of our AEAs are doing great work, others are underperforming, she said. And AEAs have grown well beyond their core mission of helping students with disabilities, creating top-heavy organizations with high administrative expenses. Iowa Representative Steve Bradley, a Republican from Cascade, had been critical of AEAs paying administrators too much before session began. He serves on the House Education Committee and told the Times Herald that he generally supports the proposal. I want anything that's best for our kids and for the teachers, he said. I think these are good ideas. Senate Minority Leader Pam Yoakum, a Democrat from Dubuque who relied on Dubuque's AEAs when raising her late daughter Sarah, said she was deeply concerned by the AEA reforms. They were just part of our family, she said of the AEA staff. My concerns are numerous on this. My initial reaction is that she's trying to privatize one more part of our education system. Reynolds's proposal also included reducing 13 mental health and 19 substance use regions into 7 unified behavioral health districts statewide. The Iowa Department of Health and Human Services would contract a private firm to help manage those districts. Postpartum Medicaid qualifications for mothers would also increase from 60 days to 12 months per Reynolds's proposal, a measure supported by both Democrats and Republicans in recent years, depending on the details. Next up is an article entitled, Iowa Lawmakers Consider Changing Utilities Regulations. Major reforms are being recommended following a study of the rate-making procedures for gas and electricity. This also is written by Benjamin Fisher of the Telegraph Herald. The Iowa Legislature's Commerce Committees have begun to review a study into the way the state regulates utility companies and their method of raising rates for customers. It's a study that includes major recommended reforms. Any reform has the potential for substantial impacts to electric and gas customers of the state's major utilities and for those companies themselves, which are major employers and players in local economic development. The study reported during the Senate Commerce Committee meeting on Tuesday was required by a law passed last year that was kickstarted by House Commerce Committee Chair Shannon Lundgren, a Republican from Piast. Area Senators Kerry Colker, a Republican from Dyersville, and Mike Klimisch, a Republican from Spillville, serve on the Senate's committee. The recommendations from LEI, the firm contracted by Iowa Utilities Board to perform the study, would require Iowa utilities to create and report long-term plans for resource development, rate changes, and more. It was the first such study of utility rate-making procedures in 25 years. The firm also recommends more frequent base rate reviews by utilities so that rates more closely reflect current economic conditions. It also calls for a way to reduce utility companies' financial losses from energy reductions that customers make as part of a company's energy efficiency programs. Both the report and its recommendations are grand in scope and scale. Colker called the report's hard copy a tree on Tuesday. Lundgren told the Telegraph Herald that while the House committee will not receive the LEI presentation until next week, the eventual legislation proposed will pick and choose from the report's recommendations. My plan is that in the next week after receiving the presentation, for us to caucus as a whole, House Commerce Committee. None of the public there, none of the utilities there, just us, she said. We can then talk about what did we learn from the report, what do we still need to know, where do we want to go. Lundgren said many of the recommendations, while substantial, could actually be made under IUB's current authority if supported by the legislature. others would require law changes. Lundgren added that a foundational strategy on which the LEI recommendations are based, integrated resource planning, is itself controversial enough to make reform's path forward unclear. Integrated resource planning is a general strategy for companies and regulators to drive energy efficiency innovations, technology advancement, power source diversification, or the transition from some power sources, like fossil fuels, to others, like renewables, nuclear, hydroelectric, natural gas, etc. Because the full report is so lengthy and detailed, Senate Commerce Committee members did not explicitly support or oppose its recommendations during Tuesday's meeting or afterward. Kolker questioned whether or not economic development professionals, which she is, were consulted when LEI conducted the study. Just reviewing this, I don't see a lot of weight or recognition of Iowa utilities' significant role in economic development, she said. Kolker told the Telegraph Herald after the meeting that she was particularly anxious to consider reforms through the economic development lens when considering the state's goal of attracting companies to move to the state. And in the final story on the front page of the Telegraph Herald today, storm sweeps through tri-states. Dubuque receives 12 inches of snow by 6 p.m. on Tuesday. This is written by Eric Hogstrom. Area snowfall totals steadily rose throughout the day Tuesday with the arrival of a winter storm that prompted the closure of local schools and government offices. Dubuque had received 6.8 inches of snow as of noon, with 4 of those inches falling since 6 a.m., according to the National Weather Service. At 6 p.m. Tuesday, accumulated snowfall totaled 12 inches in Dubuque. Dave Cousins, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service, said Dubuque's snowfall total would continue to rise. There are going to be periods of heavy snow throughout the day Tuesday, Cousins said. Other 6 p.m. snowfall amounts included 6 inches near Galena, Illinois, and 6.3 inches in Fenimore, Wisconsin. Cousins likened the discrepancies in snowfall totals to the varied amounts of rain that can fall on the tri-state area during summer thunderstorms. We will have some narrow, more intense bands of snow, and on either side of those bands, we could have slightly lower amounts, like in a thunderstorm, he said. Through Tuesday morning, the steadily falling snow had not caused significant travel problems. Kevin Barth of Donnie's Tire and Auto in Dickeyville, Wisconsin, said he was busy plowing snow Tuesday morning, but his tow trucks hadn't been needed to assist stranded motorists. I think people are staying off the roads, Barth said. Authorities issued a towing ban for U.S. 20 in Dubuque County Tuesday morning. Dubuque County Sheriff Joe Kennedy said the ban was implemented by the Iowa State Patrol. Towing bans were in effect for state highways in Delaware, Jackson, and Jones counties, according to the Iowa Department of Transportation. The bans remained in effect as of Tuesday afternoon. Kennedy said Dubuque County roads were not under a towing ban, but he advised motorists to use caution due to the deteriorating conditions. Don't be out if you don't need to be, Kennedy said. If you do go out, be prepared before you leave your house. Have an emergency kit and extra gloves in case you are stuck in a ditch for an extended period of time. Dubuque Police Department Lieutenant Brendan Welsh said at 10:15 a.m. that only 2 crashes had been reported within the Dubuque city limits Tuesday morning. One was at 8:09 a.m. and the other at 8:29 a.m., Welsh said. Both were single-vehicle crashes without injuries. Welsh said traffic appeared light in Dubuque during the early hours of the storm. I think there was enough hype about this storm that people are staying off the roads, Welsh said. Forecasters had issued a winter storm warning for the area early Monday morning. Joe Davies County, Illinois, Sheriff Kevin Turner reported only a couple of cars had slid into ditches in the county as of 10:45 a.m. So far, so good for us, Turner said. Plows were busy throughout the day clearing roadways. Dubuque Public Works Director Ariel Swift said 19 plows and 5 front-end loaders would be operating following a noon shift change. The city's plowing efforts began at 10 p.m. Monday. Things went better than expected this morning, Swift said Tuesday. A lot of people stayed home or worked from home, and the pavement temperatures were high enough in the morning to melt a lot of the early snowfall. Schools closed or transitioned to virtual learning as the storm swept into the area. Campuses were closed at Clark University, Loras College, University of Dubuque, Northeast Iowa Community College in Piasta and Dubuque, and Southwest Technical College in Fenimore. The city of Dubuque closed offices due to the storm, with Dubuque City Hall, Municipal Services Center, Leisure Services Department, Multicultural Family Center, and Housing and Community Development Department offices among those closed to the public. City employees remained accessible by phone or email throughout the day. The Dubuque County Treasurer's Office announced it would close at 1:30 p.m. Tuesday. The Asbury, Piasta, Fairley, and Holy Cross branches of the Dubuque County Library District were closed, as was Carnegie Stout Library in Dubuque. At least three financial institutions closed their local offices early Tuesday, including DuPaco Community Credit Union, DuTrack Community Credit Union, and the Midwest One Bank locations in Dubuque, Dyersville, Iowa, Fairley, Iowa, and Southwest Wisconsin. Cousins said increasing winds could contribute to travel problems into this morning. Wind gusts of up to 40 miles per hour were expected. With the heavy, wet snow falling Tuesday morning, it might not blow around too much, Cousins said, but it could later with cooler temperatures. From the Dubuque and Tri-States page, we have an article entitled Boutique's Closure Announced. Fig Leaf opened in 1991 in Galena and relocated to Dubuque in 2008. This is written by John Cruz. After 32 years in business, a local boutique clothing store has announced its planned closure. Fig Leaf, located at 345 Bluff Street, will officially close sometime in January or February, depending on when the last of the store stock is sold, according to owner Rylan McQuillan. In a tearful video posted on Facebook Saturday, McQuillan and her husband Jeff didn't hold back in sharing her disappointment over the shuttering of the business she took over from her parents 7 years ago. "I breathed every part of me into this store," McQuillan said. "I needed to say it's ending because I needed the closure." McQuillan attributed the fall of her business to the rise of major online retailers like Amazon and Temu, which she believes are threatening all local retail businesses by offering prices for goods that are nearly impossible to compete with. "Those big companies are what put us out of business," McQuillan said. "We've turned over every stone. We've looked at everything we can do." McQuillan said she hopes the closure of her business can serve as a call to action for the community as a whole to do what it can to support other local businesses that rely on the support of residents. "A lot of other businesses shared my video with their customers to show that this is real," she said. "It's a call saying, hey, without you, it's tough to survive." First opened in Galena in 1991, Fig Leaf was the creation of John and Ellen Lieberg, McQuillan's parents. Initially, the business primarily sold sleepwear and lingerie, hoping to attract couples visiting Galena for a romantic weekend getaway. In 2008, the Great Recession drained Galena of some of its tourist traffic, and the Liebergs, hoping to keep Fig Leaf alive, looked across the river for salvation. That year, they moved the store to the intersection of First and Main Streets, and with the move came a similar shift in store identity. Walls once stocked with lingerie were replaced with a variety of bath and apothecary items, organic clothing, and home goods. "When we moved, we saw a curve, and it was the right curve to take," McQuillan said. "We added things that made Fig Leaf such an experience that people wouldn't forget." In 2012, the store moved again to its current and last location on Bluff Street. Molly Grover, president and CEO of the Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce, said Fig Leaf was the ideal local retail business in the community, and she hopes that its closure reminds residents the importance of shopping local. "We're certainly very sorry and saddened to hear about the closure of Fig Leaf," Grover said. "I think their closure is a reminder to us all of the challenges that small businesses face in today's economy." McQuillan said she is still processing the loss of the business she once believed would be handed down to her children. "In time, she hopes to open a new local business, one that she believes will be valued by the community. My sparkle doesn't close," she said. "It moves with me on to my next venture." Our next article is entitled New Spaces Spice Up Boys and Girls Club. Dubuque facility seeks to provide meaningful activities for kids in a variety of ways. This is written by Maya Bond. Inside the new technology room at Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Dubuque, kids are greeted with a variety of gadgets, all perfectly organized and paired with colorful, unique seating. During a Monday evening open house, community members perused the new space, chatted with club staff, and learned about the new programming available for the tri-state area kids. The local Boys and Girls Club is a nonprofit that offers after-school programs in subject areas like technology, art, sports, and health, and in the past year, it has made significant investment into its science, technology, engineering, art, and math, or STEAM, programming. We're hoping to provide meaningful activities to our kids to expose them to different types of STEAM things and maybe open their eyes to opportunities that they may not know that they have, said Casey Smith, Director of Community Development for the local Boys and Girls Club. The new technology room includes 3D printers, virtual reality headsets, computers, and tablets. Also, a steam cart that holds various pieces and parts can be used to build machines. Comfortable couches and chairs scattered throughout the room aim to let kids relax after sitting at a desk for most of the school day. Smith said businesses also use the space to offer programming for kids, like a welding simulator activity hosted by John Deere and healthcare-related activities hosted by Clark University. The art room was renovated this year using a $100,000 DRA mission grant, Smith said. That project included adding new tables, art supplies, and a kiln. Also, the club hired an art instructor to support the increased programming. During the open house, attendees strolled through the building, sipping hot chocolate and meeting with staff members who walked them through the changes made in the past year. Marianne Yunt of Potosi, Wisconsin, said she attended the open house because she hadn't been to the club recently and wanted to see the updates. "It's wonderful to see that this space is still updated and utilized and is available to the community," Yunt said. Dubuque City Manager Mike Van Milligan said while he was excited about the remodeled space, he was most impressed with the enthusiastic club staff. "I can imagine the kids can't wait to get here after school or in the summer," Van Milligan said at the open house. "Having them engaged in these positive activities is going to be really good for them." Sheila Germain of Dubuque is a donor to the club and said she likes that each room in the space is designated for a specific topic such as technology or art. "In my mind, all the donations that the Boys and Girls Club gets are put to really, really good use to help these kids," Germain said. Smith said along with the remodeled space, the club launched the Meyer Family Scholarship last year, which is available to any club participant or past member pursuing higher education. "Hopefully these kids that are at risk, that may not have other opportunities, maybe this will give them that opportunity that they didn't know that they had," Smith said. Now here's some news in brief. First, from Piasta, Iowa, juvenile charged in connection with fire at Dollar General. A Piasta juvenile has been charged with arson in connection with a fire last month at a local store. The juvenile, whose name was not being disclosed by authorities, was charged with first-degree arson and first-degree criminal mischief for a December 3rd fire at Dollar General in Piasta, according to a press release. Piasta Police Department and Centralia Piasta Fire Department responded at approximately 5 p.m. December the 3rd to Dollar General, 8436 NICC Drive, for a report of a fire inside the building. According to the release, the fire was located in the northeast corner of the building and was immediately extinguished by employees and a responding officer. No injuries were reported. The incident was deemed suspicious at the time and was under investigation by the Iowa Fire Marshal's Division and Piasta Police. The release states that the juvenile is awaiting an initial court appearance. Next, winter storm could impact Telegraph Herald delivery. Delivery of the Telegraph Herald could be impacted today due to the ongoing winter storm. The National Weather Service winter storm warning for the tri-state area extends through 6 a.m. today with snow accumulations of 7 to 12 inches or more. The Telegraph Herald building also will be closed to the public at least until noon today, when opening will be evaluated based on weather. Customers who need assistance can call area code 563-588-5620 or mail memberservices@telegraphherald.com. Carriers will work to safely deliver newspapers throughout the tri-state area. We appreciate customers' patience regarding any weather-related delivery impacts. Our content is also available at telegraphherald.com and via our e-edition. Dubuque man sentenced to probation for role in retail theft scheme. A Dubuque man has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for his role in a Dubuque retail theft scheme. Adam C. Spinoso, age 30, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Court Judge Monica Zerini Ackley of Iowa in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County after pleading guilty to a charge of third-degree theft. As part of a plea deal, a charge of conspiracy to commit a non-forcible felony was dismissed. Court documents state that Spinoso was among a group of individuals who processed no-receipt returns at Menards, 5300 West Side Drive, over the summer for items the store identified as having been stolen. Investigators learned the group had stolen items from Menards locations in Dubuque and Platteville, Wisconsin, then processed no-receipt returns on the stolen merchandise to obtain $3,277 in store credit, of which $2,085 was redeemed, documents state. The remaining store credit was identified as fraudulent and disabled before it could be redeemed. Louis G. Mihalakis, age 60, of Dubuque, is charged with second-degree theft and conspiracy to commit a felony in connection with the incident and has pleaded not guilty. Andrew M. Trilk, age 34, of Dubuque, previously pleaded guilty to third-degree theft and was sentenced to 2 years of probation for his involvement. Sapphire A. Lanhart, age 27, of Dubuque, pleaded guilty to a charge of second-degree theft and was sentenced to 2 to 5 years of probation. Pre-registration for free four-year-old preschool open for Western Dubuque District. The pre-registration period for free four-year-old school preschool in Western Dubuque Community School District is now open. The program includes Cascade, Dyersville, Epworth, Fairley, and Piasta Elementary Schools, along with the district's partnering sites, Aquin Catholic School, LaSalle Catholic School, Seton Catholic School, St. Francis Xavier Catholic School, and Northeast Iowa Community College. According to the district's website, pre-registration will run until the official registration window opens February 12th. Interested families can access the pre-registration form at forms.office.com/r/capital T lowercase f capital U 9 capital H lowercase g capital A capital N capital Q lowercase b. The date and time of pre-registration form submissions will be time-stamped, with spots in the preschool program filled in that order. Preference will be given to families residing in the district, though out-of-district families are welcome to apply. The district website states that four-year-old preschool is open to students who live in Iowa and will be four-year-old by September 15th of this year. Free programming through the statewide voluntary preschool program is available Monday through Wednesday, with the option to add Thursday for $130 per month. And gun violence prevention discussion set for Saturday, January 13th at Dubuque Library. A local group and a state lawmaker will host a gun violence prevention discussion in Dubuque this weekend. Moms Demand Action Dubuque chapter leader Andrea Ebho, along with Iowa Representative Lindsey James, a Democrat from Dubuque, will hold the event at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, January 13th at Carnegie Stout Library, 3060 West 11th Street, according to a press release. The event follows the recent school shooting in Perry, Iowa. Now we'll turn to the opinions page, and we'll read The Other View, which is written by Tim Muthart, a Dubuque Coalition for Nonviolence contributor. And it's entitled, Step Up to Help Stop Gun Violence in America. What are we doing to stop the number one killer of children, gun violence? For most of us, the answer is, I just want to ignore it. I have too many other things to think about. Or, I'm concerned about it, but there's nothing I can do. Or, it's a political issue, I don't want to get involved, or I don't think about it. The result, gun violence is killing and maiming more of our children and getting worse each year. Most of us were shocked at the recent shooting at the high school in Perry, Iowa. While we mourn for the families of those who were killed, injured, or face lifelong trauma because of this incident, we shouldn't be surprised. Confirmed sources tell us that there were 139 gun violence incidents at schools in the USA in 2023, with 40 deaths, hundreds of injuries, and thousands in trauma. With over 390 million guns in the hands of Americans, most of whom have never taken a course on how to use and store them safely, the outcome is over 40,000 gun deaths each year, including over 2,000 children. A staggering 3 million children in the U.S. are exposed to shootings each year. You've seen these stories. A 4-year-old child died after accidentally shooting himself while visiting with his father. 16-year-old found dead from apparent suicide. You can read alarming statistics on various sources, such as www.gunviolencearchive.org, but we should focus on that what we can do to prevent this needless death and family trauma. First, we need to face the fact that we can do something to help. We need to stand up to those who build barriers to common sense solutions, the gun lobby, and those who benefit from a pro-gun public image. A recent Pew Research poll shows that 83% of Americans care about this scourge and want to do something about it. How do we stand up on behalf of our children? We learn the facts and reject the myth that guns in your home provide protection when homes with guns have homicide rates 3 times higher than those without. Suicide rates are 4 times higher. Get involved in a local, state, or national organization working for safe gun use and common sense gun legislation. On a local level, Dubuque Coalition for Nonviolence, facebook.com/DBQCNV. On a state level, Iowans for Gun Safety, iowansforgunsafety.org, or March for Our Lives Iowa, marchforourlivesia.org. On a national level, BradyUnited.org, MomsDemandAction.org, or EveryTown.org, reject the myth that people involved in the issue of gun safety want to remove your guns. Contact the Iowa Senate Judiciary Committee members to express your negative opinion about the Omnibus Gun Bill, SF543/HF654, which would allow guns on school grounds and require all Iowa schools to add NRA gun culture program. Vote for candidates who support effective, sensible gun laws that save lives and needless trauma. We need to protect our children, not guns. Now, a reminder that you are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS programs, please give us a call at area code 515-243-6833. Now it's time for obituaries, and we will remember William J. Harry, age 80, of Dubuque, who died Saturday, January the 6th, 2024, at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until 3:15 p.m. on Thursday, January the 11th, 2024, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. The funeral service for Bill will be held at 3:30 p.m. on Thursday, January the 11th, 2024, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, with Deacon Dave Roth officiating. Full military honors will be rendered by the American Legion Post No. 6 and the Mid-Atlantic Region Navy Honor Guard. Next, we remember Rowetta Freese. It is with profound sadness that we announce the loss of our mother, Rowetta Johnson Freese, on Saturday, January the 6th, 2024. To honor Rowetta's life, a private family service is being held. There will be no public services. The Hawden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cuba City, Wisconsin, is serving the family. Next, we remember Joelle A. Hope Helper, daughter of Drew and Nicole Ox Helper of Dubuque, was born on Friday, January the 5th, 2024, at the Unity Point Health Meritor Hospital in Madison, and was held lovingly by her parents for the few short hours of her life. The private mass of Christian burial for Joel will be Thursday, January the 11th, 2024, at St. Columbkille Catholic Church with Father Thomas McDermott as the celebrant. Burial will be at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. In lieu of flowers, a memorial has been established. Hoffman, Schneider, and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in care of the arrangements. Condolences can be sent to the family by visiting Joel's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Now we remember Charles R. Sickles, age 37, who died on Saturday, January the 6th, 2024. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January the 11th, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, January the 12th, at Soma Larson Funeral Home in Monfort, Wisconsin, where services will follow. Burial will follow in Rock Church Cemetery in Livingston. And we remember Charles E. Chuck Hawkins, age 80, of Cascade, Iowa, who passed away on Saturday, January the 6th, 2024, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City due to a recently diagnosed lung disease. Visitation for Chuck will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. on Friday, January the 12th, 2024, at the Reif Funeral Home in Cascade, Iowa. Visitation will also be held after 11 a.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. Services for Chuck will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, January the 13th, 2024, at Cascade Community Presbyterian Church in Cascade, Iowa, with Reverend Wayne Peach and Pastor Rick Hawkins presiding. Burial will be held in Cascade Community Cemetery in Cascade, Iowa, with full military honors afforded by the Cascade American Legion Post 528. A video tribute may be viewed and online condolences may be sent to the family at www.reiffuneralhomeinc.com. And Reif is R-E-I-F-F. And here's a list of funeral services. First, Stephen K. Kane of Muscatine, Iowa. Visitation 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, January the 13th. Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, service 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. John J. Check, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. today, St. Gabriel's Church in Prairie du Chien. John W. Dias, Andrew, Iowa, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January the 12th, Hackman Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Bellevue, Iowa. J.B. Jellison of Dubuque, visitation 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January the 11th, with the prayer service at 6:30 p.m. Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Friday, January the 12th, at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Janet E. Kramer, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, Memorial Gathering, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, January the 11th, Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Prairie du Chien, service 1 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Beverly J. Kubaszewski, Dubuque, visitation 9 to 10:15 a.m. today, St. Anthony Catholic Church, Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today at the church. Diane K. Lahr, Worthington, Iowa, Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville. Teresa J. Martin, Monono, Iowa, Celebration of Life, 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, January the 13th, Leonard Grau Funeral Home in Monono. Service 3 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Shirley M. Moser, Gutenberg, Iowa, visitation 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday, January the 13th, St. John's Lutheran Church, Gutenberg, service 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Ruth Ann Nemers, Dubuque, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January the 12th, Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, January the 13th, St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Thomas S. Paulus, Platteville, Wisconsin, visitation 5 to 8 p.m. Friday, January the 12th, Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville. Tammy R. Scott, Belmont, Wisconsin. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, Miller Steinke Funeral Home, Scales Mound, Illinois, and 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday, January the 11th, Scales Mound United Methodist Church, service 11 a.m. Thursday at the church. Clara Streng, Dubuque, service 10:30 a.m. Friday, January the 12th, Clare House Chapel, Mount St. Francis Center. Austin L. Wiest, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Lancaster. And Rose M. Wolf, Cascade, Iowa. Visitation 9 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, January 13th, St. Martin Catholic Church, Cascade. Rosary service 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Now we'll jump over to the sports page, and we'll start with Girl Prep Athletics Senior plans to celebrate 50 years of female student athletes. Two-day Golden Jubilee highlights expanded opportunities for girls. This article is written by Jim Leitner of the Telegraph Herald. Susan Farber appreciates the role athletics played in her life, especially at a time when girls' interscholastic opportunities were just in their infancy. Farber and fellow Dubuque Senior Athletic Hall of Famer Connie Bandy Hodge spearheaded Golden Jubilee celebration, a tribute to 50 years of expanded opportunities for female student athletes at the school. The two-day celebration begins Friday, January the 26th at Nora Gymnasium during the senior girls basketball game against city rival Wallert, with special halftime recognition for past alumni female student athletes. The game also serves as the school's annual Pink Out game. The following day, alumni will take part in a social hour and opportunities to reconnect at Charlotte's Coffee House from 9 to 10:30 a.m. and Dimensional Brewing Company from 2 to 5 p.m. The celebration acknowledges the remarkable growth in women's sports offerings at Senior, now encompassing hundreds of student athletes each year, Farber said. This signifies a broader embrace of lifelong values that undoubtedly contribute to their personal and professional development. I eagerly anticipate connecting with other women athlete alums, sharing stories, and aspiring to inspire future generations with the rich legacy of female student athletes. Farber, a 1969 graduate, earned 6 varsity letters in 2 sports at Senior. She went 38-1 in singles and won district tennis championships in doubles in 1968 and 1969 while qualifying for state. Farber won a Big Ten Conference doubles championship at the University of Iowa and also graduated from Georgetown University. She won the inaugural Female Athlete of the Year award at Senior. Jesse Owens presented the Woman Athlete of the Year award to me, a truly impactful point of inflection in my life, she said. Participating in Senior's tennis program and cheering instilled in me the essential qualities of character, teamwork, and representing the school. Hodge, a 1977 graduate of Senior, won 4 varsity letters in softball, 4 in tennis, 3 in volleyball, and 2 in basketball, serving as team captain in all 4 sports. Senior's outstanding female athlete in 1977, she earned all-state honors in volleyball and softball, 2 each. Hodge played as a freshman on the first girls' basketball team at Senior 50 years ago this fall. In just 3 years under Hall of Fame coach Larry Krogan, the Rams were playing for berths in the state tournament. We thought it would be a good idea to recognize the female student athletes of the past 50 years, said Hodge, also a member of the Loras College and University of Dubuque Halls of Fame, and it's a great opportunity to reminisce and make new memories. Participants in the Golden Jubilee will receive free admission to the Pink Out game as well as a commemorative t-shirt. To secure a spot and join the celebration, Senior alumni are asked to register before January 15th deadline on Eventbrite.com by searching for Dubuque Jubilee. Our next story is entitled Simon Sparks Spartans, native selected as ARC Hoops Player of the Week. This is also written by Jim Leitner of the Telegraph Herald. Brock Simon delivered a career-high performance, and the American Rivers Conference took notice. The University of Dubuque graduate student and former Cascade, Iowa multi-sport standout earned the league's Men's Basketball Player of the Week award after leading the Spartans to a pair of conference wins over Wartburg and Buena Vista. Simon dropped a career-high 24 points against Wartburg while also recording 5 rebounds, 4 steals, and 3 assists. He then put up 23 points with 4 rebounds and 2 blocks against Buena Vista. Over the 2 games, the guard shot 18 for 23 from the field and 7 for 9 from beyond the arc to move the number 24-ranked Spartans to 13 wins and 0 losses overall for just the 4th time in school history. They have a record of 5 wins and 0 losses in league play. Simon earned the 2021-2022 ARC Defensive Player of the Year award. This is his second career Player of the Week honor. The Spartans visit Co., which has a record of 13-1 overall and 5-0 in the ARC, while receiving votes in the latest poll tonight in Cedar Rapids. They visit Central in Pella, Iowa on Saturday. Loris's Haslow defeated. Loris College women's basketball player Madison Haslow, a fifth-year forward from Crystal Lake, Illinois, earned the ARCU's Women's Athlete of the Week award after leading the Dew Hawks to wins over Buena Vista and Central. Haslow tied a school record with 8 made three-pointers in the contest against Buena Vista en route to a 24-point performance. She added 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks. Against Central, Haslow finished with 11 points, 9 rebounds, 3 steals, and 1 block for the number 24 Dew Hawks, who improved to a record of 12 wins and 2 losses overall, and 4 wins and 1 loss in the ARC. WIAC honors Love. The University of Wisconsin-Platteville's Max Love, a sophomore from St. Charles, won the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference Men's Basketball Player of the Week award. Love helped the Pioneers start WIAC action with a pair of wins by averaging 23 points and 6.5 rebounds across the week while shooting 53.1% from the floor and 52.4% from three-point range. He opened the week with 19 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists in a 74-69 win at UW-Eau Claire on January the 3rd before scoring a career-high 27 points with 7 rebounds, 2 blocks, and 1 steal against UW-River Falls on January the 6th. Love dropped 6 trays against the Falcons. And the ARC names scholar athletes. The ARC on Tuesday announced Nebraska Wesleyan runner Garrett Lenners and Simpson volleyball player Marissa Salbaris as its men's and women's scholar athletes of the year. The award, the highest individual honor from the conference, goes to an alumnus from the previous academic year and has been presented annually since 2001. Loris national champion distance runner Cassie Parker, a Gutenberg, Iowa native, was a finalist for the award. Clark schedules ring ceremony. The Clark University women's basketball team will receive its NAIA national championship rings tonight following the Pride's 5:30 p.m. home game against Mount Mercy University in the Kiel Center. The ceremony will follow warm-ups for the men's team's game that night. Clark interim president Fletcher Lampkin, director of athletics Kurt Long, and former head coach Courtney Boyd will each provide brief remarks during the short ceremony. Along with Boyd, the majority of the 2022-2023 roster and staff will be returning. That includes the graduating seniors who produced the first back-to-back 30-win seasons in program history and went 33 wins and 4 losses in 2023 to set the program record for wins in a season. And Einsweller to St. Norbert. Galena High School senior Cooper Einsweller recently signed a national letter of intent to run NCAA Division III track and field at St. Norbert College in DePere, Wisconsin. In USHL news, mid-season showcase, Dubuque's Reader Bernstein selected to All-American game. This is written by Jim Leitner of the Telegraph Herald. James Reader and Thatcher Bernstein plan to relax and play their own game against some of the USHL top NHL draft eligible players next week. The duo will continue a Dubuque Fighting Saints tradition of sending players to the Chipotle All-American Game, a 45-player showcase set for Monday at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, Michigan. NHL Network will broadcast the game live at 3 p.m. "It's just an honor to be selected because there are so many great players on that list," said Reeder, a 5'10", 168-pound right wing from Glenview, Illinois, who has recorded 12 goals and 31 points in 25 games in his second USHL season. "It's going to be a fun couple of days, and Thatcher and I are both looking forward to going." In talking to teammate Lucas St. Louis, who played in it last year, "It's a really fun experience playing against great players in that setting. You just have to trust yourself, play your own game, and put your best foot forward. Just know you're there for a reason." Reeder and Bernstein will benefit from the fact that Dubuque plays the National Team Development Program U-17 squad this weekend in Plymouth, so they won't have extra travel. It will get a little different at puck drop, though, as Bernstein and Reeder have been assigned to opposite sides. "I'm pumped, but I'm not as pumped that I'm playing against him, though," said Bernstein, a 6'4", 213-pound goaltender from Boston who has gone 5-4-0-0 with a 4.11 goals against average and a .859 save percentage in his rookie year in the USHL. "I'm excited for Reeder because he deserves it. I'm sure he'll do great, just hopefully not in the period I'm playing against him. But it'll be fun, and it'll be nice that we'll already be there." Both players will be donning American jerseys for the second time this season. This summer, Bernstein and Saints teammate Colin Frank helped USA Hockey win bronze at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup in Czechia and Slovakia. Reeder and Saints associate head coach Evan Dixon helped the Americans win bronze last month at the World Junior A Challenge in Nova Scotia. "Like those two events, scouts and executives from every NHL team will be in attendance for the All-American game. This is a great chance to showcase themselves against the best draft-eligible players in the league, and any chance you get to play against the best players is a good opportunity to raise your game and prove to people you're a player," Saints head coach Kirk McDonald said. "No matter who you are, there are going to be doubters. Reeder is one of those guys who's really starting to prove a lot of people wrong. We have some other players on our team who deserve this opportunity as well, but that decision is a little above my pay grade." The team's success certainly helped Reeder take his game to another level in his second year in the USHL after being placed on NHL Central Scouting's initial watch list as a potential 6th or 7th round pick. Dubuque leads the Eastern Conference with a 28-1-3 record and ranks 2nd with 141 goals scored, just 2 behind Western Conference leader Fargo. Next up, Iowa State upsets number 2 Houston. This comes from the Associated Press, and the dateline is Ames, Iowa. Milan Momcilovic made a fadeaway jumper from the baseline with 31 seconds remaining to give the Iowa State Cyclones the lead for good Tuesday night in a 57-53 upset of number 2 ranked Houston at Hilton Coliseum. Momcilovic's jumper gave the Cyclones a 53-55 lead, and he knocked down a pair of free throws with 10 seconds remaining to account for the final margin and hand the Cougars their first defeat of the season. The Cyclones improved to 12 wins and 3 losses overall and 1 win and 1 loss in the Big 12 Conference, while the Cougars fell to 14 wins and 1 loss, 1 win and 1 loss in the Big 12. Iowa State bolted to a 14-0 lead in the first 5 minutes and 40 seconds of the game before the Cougars dented the scoreboard. Houston didn't lead until 3 minutes and 17 seconds remained in the second half. Iowa State led 31-21 at the intermission and hung on despite being outscored 32-26 in the second half. Tamman Lipsey led the Cyclones in scoring with 14 points, while Momcilovic added 11. The King and Hans Hasen Award chipped in 9 points apiece for Iowa State. King also grabbed a team-best 9 rebounds. Emmanuel Sharp led Houston with 20 points, and Jamal Sheed contributed 14. Jawan Roberts led the Cougars with 8 rebounds. Despite the inclement weather and students not being in class, the Cyclones drew a sold-out crowd of 14,267 to Hilton Coliseum. In men's college basketball, UNI Drake host MVC foes tonight. The UIC Northern Iowa takes on UIC after Isaiah Rivera scored 24 points in UIC's 70-64 victory over Valparaiso Beacons. The Panthers are 4 wins and 2 losses in home games. Northern Iowa is 5th in the Missouri Valley Conference with 23.9 defensive rebounds per game, led by Nate Heisey, averaging 5.1. UIC scores 71.1 points while outscoring opponents by 6.7 points per game. Northern Iowa makes 47.1% of its shots from the field this season, which is 8.2 percentage points higher than UIC has allowed to its opponents. UIC has shot at a 45.5% rate from the field this season, 1.2 percentage points greater than the 44.3% shooting opponents of Northern Iowa have averaged. And that game takes place at 7 p.m. tonight, and it's going to be seen on ESPN+. And Indiana State's at Drake tonight, 7 p.m. The game can be seen on ESPN+. Bottom line of that game, Indiana State takes on the Drake Bulldogs after Jason Kent scored 24 points in Indiana State's 77-66 win over the Northern Iowa Panthers. The Bulldogs have a record of 8-0 at home. Drake averages 78.4 points while outscoring opponents by 9.9 points per game. Indiana State ranks 7th in the Missouri Valley Conference with 34.7 rebounds per game, led by Kent, averaging 6.7. Drake makes 47.6% of its shots from the field this season, which is 4.4% percentage points higher than Indiana State has allowed to its opponents. Indiana State averages 18 more points per game than Drake gives up. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.